Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
2020 now, eh?
Not really, but better.
Better.
Yeah.
That's good. I have an extra copy of this book if anybody would like to borrow it. One of them is called Refining Your Life, From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, and the other is called From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, Refining Your Life. So, either one will do. They're both translated by Father Tom. Thomas Wright, who was a Catholic priest who sat with Uchiyama Roshi for 5 or 6 years at Antaiji. And he's the one, with some help, did this translation. He has a very nice introduction. And he makes an important point about the point of the whole thing. Of course, it's about cooking. Cooking is the subject, how to cook for a monastery. But Dogen is using the subject as a way of pointing to how we can be with a life of Zazen, not as a philosophy, not as an idea, not as a practice in a Zendo, but as a life. So Father Tom points out that I have enough glasses, but I can see. He says, the reader should not get the idea that here I am comparing Zazen with the rest of our day-to-day activities. To do so would be to fall into the trap that many practitioners fall into of clinging to the idea that practicing Zazen is most important. Therefore, one should practice it 24 hours a day. The error here is in taking literally the idea of Zazen being the most important activity in our life, as opposed to all our other activities. And I've certainly seen that and been there and done that. It's very easy to get caught up in the practice and think that everything else is pretty much by the way. And that makes a very unhappy life, actually. It means that everything is interrupting this wonderful practice. On the other hand, he says, there is another trap that people can and often do fall into, and that is the one of thinking that we must practice Zazen in all of our day-to-day activities. The obvious next step to the way of thinking is to equate all of one's activities with Zazen. That is, everything one does is Zazen: eating, sleeping, drinking, being. The practical problem in this way of thinking is that all too often people simply wind up doing less and less Zazen, deluding themselves into believing that since all their activities are Zazen, there is no need to sit and face the wall and do Zazen. Also been there, done that. In in the childhood of my children, I had to say that often. The kids come first, and so that becomes a practice. We have many opportunities in our life to where some things are to take precedence over our sitting practice. But that isn't the same as what Dogen is pointing to in this whole little teaching, big teaching, which is, although everything we do is a form of samadhi, it isn't just the doing of it, it's the exclusive activity of whatever we do. It's how we go about doing what we do. I'm reading Blanche Hartman's new little book that just got published by Shambhala, and she has a number of things to say about how it is that we either in zazen or in a daily activity, that if we're not just doing it, if we're washing the dishes and thinking about what she said 3 days ago and what we're going to make for dinner tonight, that isn't zazen in daily life. And if we're sitting, it's the same. If we're sitting and imagining how things are going to be, or wishing we were somewhere else, or etc., etc., as long as we're engaged in projecting our mind in different directions, it's not zazen. The word that is emphasized often is the word just. Just sitting. Just reading. Just driving. Without laying all kinds of extra ideas on top of whatever it is. To let it be, as some say, to let it be enough. Because one of the reasons we go in that direction and become so distracted is because we feel it isn't enough. That we should be somehow getting more. More stimulation, more interest, more, there's something I'm missing, or something I should be doing, or there's always something else going on besides the just. And so what happens is we miss most of wherever and whatever we are. We're not all there, as they say. Not all there. I've been doing my exercises to Joan Halifax's podcasts, and she... in the one I've just listened to, is discussing an art teacher, an art history, American art history teacher at Harvard, who has her students sit before a painting for 3 hours before they're allowed to write anything about it. And she said they all complain, and they say, well, you know, after 10 minutes, we've seen it. We've seen the whole thing. Of course we have. And then she says, well, have you seen how the ear is the same shape as this other thing here? And have you seen how the color... And then as they sit hour after hour, they see more and more. It's the same as that famous story of William James being set to study a fish, a pickled fish, and write everything he can see about the fish, and he does it all day long. And then he goes to the teacher and he says, "Now this is it. This is, I've seen it." And the teacher says, "Go back, do it again tomorrow." And he hasn't do it for a whole week. And at the end of the week, the teacher says, "You'll never get to the end of the fish. There's always more." And yet, we're so speedy and so greedy that we're by it. It's over before we're even there. So that's one element, one large element to this. It's an element of our sitting. The greed that we sit with, wanting to get somewhere, to somehow accomplish something, even though there's nothing to accomplish. It's in us, it's how we're made. It's part of how we're made. And the wonder of Zazen is that it's another part of how we're made. And it's what we cultivate with just being patient, being quiet, and paying attention. And that's what Dogen then describes in cooking a meal, cooking for dozens of hungry people. How do you cook for dozens of hungry people and be patient and quiet without getting rattled and being in a hurry and thinking of a dozen things all at the same time? To just cook the rice. Just slice the tofu. So the first part of this is sort of Buddhism 101, which is always useful to be reminded of. He starts out by talking about the fact that when people get together to practice, that they have officers, somebody in charge of organizing things, somebody in charge of opening and closing and setting up the chairs and making arrangements for what happens next, and for cooking the meals. We keep the names from this old time. We call them Shika and Ino and Tenzo, the Japanese names. We're still doing it. We have an Ino at this point, which is really cool. And we take turns being Ino, just as they did in the monastery, just as they still do. The monks holding each office are all disciples of the Buddha, and all carry out the activities of Buddha through their respective offices. Among these officers is the Tenzo, who carries the responsibility of preparing the community's meals. He says this work has always been carried out by teachers settled in the way, and by others who have aroused the bodhisattva spirit within themselves. Such a practice requires exerting all your energies. If a man entrusted in this work lacks such a spirit, then he will only endure unnecessary hardships and suffering that will have no value to his pursuit of the way. It also makes it harder to sit if the Tenzo is in a state, it is reflected in the food. It's invariable. It's true at home, and it's true in the monastery as well, or at Sesshin. And this is why the Tenzo is considered to be the most important officer in the whole of the monastery, because everything hinges on the food. That's what everybody thinks of first in a retreat, in a monastery, in a school, in a boarding school. The first thing people talk about is the food. How's the food? And everybody has very strong opinions about it. These days, more than ever, everybody has a different diet. That becomes even more of a challenge. What we try to do in our sessions is to ask people if they have a special diet to bring that food for themselves, because trying to adjust to a dozen different diets is not possible in cooking for a great crowd of people. So it means a little conformity, a little harmony, a little extra effort. Said we should thoroughly study the guidelines for the Zen monastery concerning the overall work of the Tenzo, and listen clearly to what those who have done this work have to tell us regarding the details. And this happened to him when he went to China. He encountered several cooks, and they taught him a great deal. The one that he met, who was drying mushrooms and was miles from the monastery, was a very old gentleman. And Dogen said, "Well, why are you doing this job? Why don't you have somebody else who's younger?" And he said, "It's my job, and I have to get back. If you've got the job, you just do it." It means committing to whatever we've already committed to in life. And it's a wonderful study to see how often we don't. It's amazing, really, how often I'll say to myself, "Well, I think I'll do something," and then don't do it. I don't do it. Or I do it in a way that isn't just enough, that has extra. So it's a study, it's a continual study, a continual practice of practice, just to stay aware and awake. And to remind ourselves, all my ancient wrong actions arising from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion based on mind, speech, and body, I have to avow. This is how it is. So, I don't know whether to go on. I'll go. go on to this next paragraph because it's lovely. I shall now take up the work of the Tenzo concerning a period of one complete day. And that's what this whole thing is, really, is the whole day. After the noon meal, the Tenzo should go to the prior, the guy in charge, the woman in charge, as it were, and the controller, to get the rice and the vegetables and other ingredients for the following morning and noon meals. They don't have dinner. In Sesshin, we have a pretend dinner, and in most monasteries, in this kind of climate, not having some kind of meal in the evening is healthy. And so there's a small meal in the evening. In Theravadin practice in the monasteries, there's a huge meal at lunch, big bowl with whatever has been donated, and it can be many, many different things in a giant bowl. And then presumably they don't eat anything in the evening, although they have tea and sweets. And the monastery I visited a couple of times, lots of honey in the tea. They just make it really, really sweet, so it's feeding them in some way. It's a difficult life. It's a challenge. But in the monastery, they, I think, also have some kind of extra in the evening, but not much. What our tradition is to cook leftovers, just make a casserole with whatever is left over from lunch and bake it up in the oven and then serve it out. Recently, in the last years, we've had very fancy buffet dinners instead, so we're considering going back to the old way. This is a warning. Once he has these ingredients, he must handle them as carefully as if they were his own eyes. Renyang of Bainong said, use the property and possessions of the community as carefully as if they were your own eyes. The Tenzo should handle all food he receives with respect, as if it were to be used in a meal for the emperor. Cooked and uncooked food must be handled in the same manner. So this reminds me of how Suzuki Roshi went shopping. When he went shopping for fruits and vegetables, he always chose the damaged ones. He said he felt sorry for them and didn't want them to be rejected. So he always came home with things that maybe you and I wouldn't choose. I think of him every time I go to the grocery store. It's a relationship of respect carried out in everyday life, carried out in such a simple thing as just cooking food. But if not there, where? If not here, where? That's the point. Next, all the officers meet in the kitchen or pantry and decide what food is to be prepared for the following day. For example, the type of rice gruel, the vegetables, the seasoning. In the instructions, it says, when deciding on the amount of food and number of side dishes for the morning and noonday meals, the Tenzo should consult with the other officers. They are, and this is the name of them, Sutsu and Kansen and Futsu and Ino and Shisui. When they have chosen the meals, the menu should be posted on the notice boards in front of the abbot's room as well as in front of the study hall. That shows how important it is to everybody. Everybody wants to know. That sounds complex, every single day to have all the officers deciding on the menu. We haven't ever done that. I think those of you who have done this cooking job would, that might be a little dicey, interesting, but that's the way it was done then. When this has been done, preparations for the next morning's meal may begin. You must not leave the washing of rice or preparation of vegetables to others, but must carry out this work with your own hands. Put your whole attention into the work, seeing just what the situation calls for. Do not be absent-minded in your activities, not so absorbed in one aspect or a matter that you fail to see its other aspects. Do not overlook one drop in the ocean of virtue by entrusting the work to others. Cultivate a spirit which strives to increase the source of goodness upon the mountain of goodness. So that's probably enough for tonight. Time for questions, comments. All the cooking people.
So detailed, so intense, and to do it every day, crazy. And then I remembered, I used to work as a QA engineer, and every day we would discuss the product, we would discuss the test plan, we would all agree on what the test would do each day,
yeah.
We would write it up, and I thought, oh, I'm silly.
You did it.
I did it, the same stuff. And then we'd have a meeting at the end, fix bugs, report bugs.
Yeah.
Absolutely the same.
Same, same. Yeah.
Okay.
Very, very focused.
Totally, and do it every day.
Yes.
Sometimes on weekends.
Yeah. Yeah. And anybody who keeps a house knows that. You sweep a floor and then you sweep the floor again and you cook a meal and then you cook another meal just like it. It goes on forever.
I just vacuumed this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And in our cars. Texting and trimming a beard and putting on makeup.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch people as they go by. It's really scary.
Eating.
Yes.
Referring back to what you
Father Tom, that does that balance where you're in daily life and in Zazen, where you're thinking, not thinking, or you're doing just what you're doing, but not in the in a kind of a real samadhi state, where you're in another realm entirely. But I find that when I'm able to do that, there's a whole different relationship to time, and then it's really that it feels like a very timeless place, and the time goes, I mean, we just lose track of the way we have ordinary time. But then when talking about doing things, multitasking, Wendy brought up, it's even if you just listen to the radio or music in the car, you're already sort of divided. Even if you keep it simple and don't eat and trim your beard and
it's true.
Much less text.
Yeah.
I was in Europe and I saw people driving and these winding mountain roads, and I mean they were really windy and really narrow along the coast of Croatia. And these guys were just doing it. I was amazed. I just was walking along the side of the road and being very mindful that I wasn't in the way. And I just was watching them text with one hand and do those curves just with the other. Oh my goodness. Clearly they knew the roads, but still it was a little...
Yeah.
Just like what we're capable of and what we think is important, I guess is what came up from me.
But we're not, really.
No, we're not.
I mean they have terrible accidents.
I think sooner or later, but
yeah.
I think it's important. It's important.
Just reminded me of something. I used to hang glide a long time ago. And the story went, there are bold hang gliders and there are old hang gliders. But there are no bold old ones. You can ask up there.
I believe it.
Asking for trouble.
I believe it.
I'm so happy you're still here.
Yeah.
I have a, that just reminded me of, I was kind of feeling of a really sad story of someone I knew also years ago. And it wasn't that he was, but so much can happen up there with the wind, with the wind, and, you know, that you're not in control of.
Yeah, I
attention.
Had one particular experience that led me to stop. I didn't break anything, really. But yeah, it came down rather hard. Then my wife says, remember that telescope you wanted to buy? Drop the hang gliding, go buy the telescope. Keep your feet on the ground.
You can go up another way.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
very
safer.
Wise. Very wise. Well, I was just reading that the teenage brain begins to mature from the back, from the most primitive part of the mind, and it takes a long time for it to get all the way up here. And so it explains the craziness of teenagers, because they just don't quite understand a lot of things, including their own ability to do themselves in with things like hang gliding. In fact, they like the excitement. That's what they live on, is the excitement. Well, it's 8 o'clock. Announcements?
If we need an opener for next week, anybody be able to? That will be good.
And our half day sit on Saturday after this next one will be with the Wednesday group, So Brigitte will be here, and we're encouraging people to come and sit. We start at 9:30 instead of 9 and finish at noon, and we'll try to bring a little lunch, and we can eat it out in the backyard, get to know each other a little bit. And I'll be here tomorrow night, actually, also. So. Okay, 1 minute 6.